question of climate change is certainly at the forefront of our minds right now. It has been a crippling political issue to deal with, and right now it's tearing at the very fabric of politics around the world. But it has always been on our mind. Our scientists have been looking at the skies, have been wondering about the weather, and wondering what it means for us now for centuries. Our resident historian Nick Brody is with us to take us through that. Nick, nice to have you on the program. Let's wind back the clock hundreds of years, and we go back to the medieval time. And they were wondering about climate change then.
Well, yeah, one of the interesting facets of the famous Doomsday Book, when the Normans were assessing the land so they could tax it, there's a lot of wasteland and land that had been reclaimed. So, for instance, the Fens of Norfolk, you know, they knew that the land was changing and that the climate changed over long periods of time, even back then.
What was their awareness of that change, and how aware were they of the forces and the processes that were contributing to that?
Their understanding of global climate science, of course, was not very well developed. So it's really just a lifetime assessment thing. The more educated people, you know, monks and scholars and so on, will have been able to read earlier people's accounts of what weather was like in their time, such that they had a bit of an idea that, of course, it had changed. You know, a case in point is by the latter medieval period, as climate was starting to cool again, people could read reports of vineyards in England suggesting that it used to be warmer than it was then. So they understood that it changed over long periods of time.
Now, of course, that understanding would have been based on a cyclical change. It would have been seen as part of nature's just ebb and flow. But if we fast forward to the Industrial Revolution, do we start to see then an awareness about the impact that humankind is having on the environment, when you look at that rapid change and the smog-filled skies of the bigger towns and the emerging cities?
It certainly starts to become seen as a possibility during the Industrial Revolution. So one of the really interesting things, I think, about the story of climate change and the history of climate change is that the study of the climate roughly coincides with the advent of the Industrial Revolution. So as humans started to change the climate in a dramatic way, they also started to better understand the climate, such that eventually in the early 20th century, people had been able to say, to look back over the previous half century and look at the data and see that they had been changing the climate. It kind of advanced in tandem, and it's quite fascinating.
What's really fascinating as well is that there was an international consensus emerging about the need to do something like that. If you go to the sort of mid-period of the 1800s, you know, we talk about the Paris Climate Accords today. Well, there was the equivalent, wasn't there, in the 1800s?
Yeah, scientists were working out they were trying to resolve a number of really complex scientific questions about the nature of the universe and the nature of the Earth. So they were developing theories which would later underpin our current understandings of climate science. So they understood the potential, and there was, you know, a development of a consensus that there was a potential. When the data was first presented in the early 20th century about climate change, there was, of course, naturally some resistance within the academy, but that shifted fairly quickly. I mean, when you think about it, it's quite rapid, such that the first real presentation of the data was about 1938, I believe. And by the time I was going through primary school, you know, half a century later, it was fairly established and just taught as the norm.
If we go back to that mid-1800 period, around the 1830s, Australia as well was really critical to this. Tell us about the link between Australia and Mount Kosciuszko when it comes to being able to track the changes of climate and the impact that it may have had on people.
It's fascinating that you mentioned the Paris Climate Accords as such a recent topic of discussion today. But going back to 1896, there was an international meteorological conference in Paris, and an Australian was part of that. So there was an Australian delegate, Clement Ragg. He was a government meteorologist, and he was proposing establishing meteorological observation stations in Kosciuszko, so at the very top of Kosciuszko, and Mount Wellington down here in Hobart as well, and basically gathering data from these extreme locations so that they could better understand climate science. And it's that role in gathering the data from the late 19th century onwards that means we can speak with such confidence about what has happened since then.
So what has disrupted that? If there was this emerging consensus that something needed to be done, if there were countries working together, if Australia was right at the centre of that in being able to observe these changes, was it a pushback from government? Was it scientific debate? Why have we seen this struggle to gain momentum?
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting points to come out of that. One is that the government stopped supporting the Kosciuszko Observatory within a few years, so there's a government funding level there. It's easier to simply ignore things and then you don't have to pay for them. There's also an element, I think, of geological and theological disruption taking place. So that history of climate science...
So it's an ideological battle even then.
Yeah, well, it certainly does. In the mid-19th century, for instance, as scientists are starting to gather data and study climate in a methodical fashion, that's also the same period that scientists are getting a really good understanding about the age of the Earth and how geology works, which is, again, disrupting biblical narratives of the origins of humanity and the age of the Earth. And so that split also plays into the climate split as well. The same kind of people who think the Earth is only 6,000 years old are the same kind of people who will reject the climate science.
And Nick, just finally, given the vast expanse of time that we're talking about here and the way that people have observed these changes and lived through these changes, what does it say about today and the future and how we may continue to try to discuss or debate or argue about this rather than being able to deal with it?
I think anybody who's been in a corporate meeting understands that it only takes one really stubborn person to disrupt things. So it doesn't matter almost how many people believe it. It's the obstinacy of those who don't that is the real problem. And I'm not really sure how we can overcome that other than by continuing to push the point. And, of course, in the early days, even the scientists didn't believe the first bits of data coming forward. So that consensus developed because people stuck with it. So I think sticking with it and just keep pushing at it is simply the only real option we've got on the table.
Absolutely fascinating. Nick, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Good to see you. Thank you again for joining us.
Thanks, Dan.
And that's our show for tonight. I'll see you again tomorrow. Until then, good night.